This morning, considerable time was spent looking at the resolution on the Windsor Continuation Group report, and a substantial resolution was passed. Some concern about some parts of the resolution, but all in all, strongly supported by the members of the council. And just to recap, we thank the Archbishop of Canterbury for his report. The council affirmed the recommendations of the Windsor Continuation Group, including the call to uphold the moratoria in the life of the communion. There was considerable debate about whether reference to the moratorium on litigation should be added to the resolution, and in the end it was decided not to add that. That had been a call from the primates and hadn't been a moratorium initiated in the Windsor report itself. Though it was very evident from the debate that there is extensive concern about the litigation in the United States in particular. And it's worth noting in that regard the terms that were used by the primates in Dar es Salaam. The primates called for an end to anybody trying to alienate the property of the Episcopal Church and for an end to litigation by the Episcopal Church in response. The council is aware that neither side, if you like, of the argument is living up to that call from the primates in Dar es Salaam, and a great deal of sadness and hurt is resulting. The primates called on the Episcopal Church to allow dissenting groups to continue to use property and called on those dissenting groups not to try to alienate the property from the Episcopal Church, and unfortunately that's not working out in the way the primates had hoped and anticipated, and that the concern of the primates was clearly reflected in the council. The council added to the draft resolution provided by the Joint Standing Committee for consideration a couple of things. First, it acknowledged the attempts, the serious attempts that have been made to hold to the moratoria, and recognised the cost of that to all sides. And it picked up a suggestion in the Windsor Continuation Group report and added to the resolution the urgent need for conversations with provinces where there are concerns that the moratoria are not being upheld. And the Archbishop of Canterbury indicated to the council that in his view, the beginnings of the machinery to facilitate those urgent conversations was in place. And by that he was referring to the pastoral visitors that have been appointed and the work that's ongoing in fleshing out the way in which a pastoral forum will work. And then the council asked the Archbishop to work with the Standing Committee and the Secretary-General to carry forward the recommendations of the Windsor Continuation Group, referred substantial matters to the new Standing Commission on Unity, Faith and Order to look at the instruments of communion, their roles and responsibilities and the way they relate to each other, and finally concluded with a call to the whole communion for repentance, conversion and renewal. So that really was the substance. We then moved into considering the covenant, and that's still in process, as you know. We were into the middle of some sticky procedural matters, which hopefully will be sorted out after lunch, but you'll be there to observe all that. So with those few words, let me hand over to any questions you'd like to ask. Did you want to add anything, Gregory, to my initial observation?
I don't think so. I think one little clarifying of the press briefing I gave the other day, and that is when I spoke about the work of the Windsor Continuation Group as being completed, that's been reported in some circles as me saying that the Windsor process has been completed. And I didn't intend to say that at all. The Windsor Continuation Group has made its report and has now ceased to exist as a commission reporting to the Archbishop of Canterbury. But I think what this morning's resolution demonstrates is that the sort of formula adopted in the Windsor report is still very much the roadmap for the way ahead, which the instruments of communion want to commend in the life of the communion. So the Windsor process is very much still the main schema that is being offered by the instruments of communion to tackle the tensions which exist.
Chris, can we start with you and we'll go in that passion today?
Yes, I think I probably want to ask your comment on what you think the debate illustrates about the tone, or the tone of the debate illustrates about the culture in the communion. There was considerable feeling about hurting people, about people under pressure, people being alienated from their churches and various things on the one side. And on the other side, we had points of order and what could be written into what could be revised in terms of a motion as being sticking points. And I'm just trying to remember the other sort of side of a sticking point was about a diocese's owning property, which is not certainly not the case in the Church of England, and whether I don't know particularly if it's established as the case in the CUSA, but or TEC. Could you comment on the tone and what it tells us about the support or the view that the meeting, the communion, might have about these litigation processes?
I'm dealing very much with my impressions.
Yeah.
There certainly is deep feeling on both sides. People feel alienated from the church and want to establish a kind of safe home for themselves. At the same time, on the side of TEC, I understand the extensive efforts that have been gone to by the leadership to accommodate people and to give them space, and yet for whatever reasons the needs of people on both sides seem not to be met and the hurt continues. I detected a careful approach by the council, a respectful approach. It seemed to me that the council wanted to address the situation but not take sides in it. I think the call of the council to facilitate urgent conversations, face-to-face conversations to try and find ways forward, was strongly supported. So there'd be my impressions. I think in line with the call from the primates in Dar es Salaam, we want to find a way through it without resorting to litigation, but many of us understand that if moves are made to alienate property, then, of course, you can expect moves to defend those initiatives, and that is a source of great sadness, I think, to everyone in the communion, and we would like to find other ways forward. They were my impressions.
I don't think I have anything to add to that description.
Colin?
This is following on from that about the alienation of property. There doesn't seem to me to be clarity, as I would expect in a Church of England diocese, say, that property is owned by the national church, and that anybody who then secedes from the national church body forfeits the right to that property, and that those who have done so in the Episcopal Church have not relinquished immediately the property.
I think I'm not really qualified to comment on the legal situation about ownership of property in the United States, but from my own experience in Australia, I do understand how those tensions arise. In Australia, usually property is vested, that is legally owned, by some diocesan authority, a trust corporation or some legal entity which is diocesan in character. But that does not prevent a sense of local ownership by the people who have worshipped in those buildings and, you know, had their celebrations, their times of joy and sadness in those buildings, who've worked hard to raise the money to build them. There is a sense, a strong sense in Anglicanism of local connection with a particular place. And I think sometimes the legal niceties about whom the property is vested in are sometimes lost. Nevertheless, I can understand what the tech leaders are saying. If they have a legal and fiduciary responsibility to ensure that property is used in a particular way for a particular purpose, then of course they're obliged to discharge that responsibility. What the primates called for was an accommodation while we work our way through these hurts, so that people would be allowed to continue to use their property, provided they didn't try to alienate it from tech in any legal sense, and called on tech to allow people to continue to use their property, but recognised that if there were attempts to alienate it, there would be a response. So hopefully as we continue to talk, perhaps temperatures can cool a bit and a way forward can be found.
David? Let me just make one observation and a question. The Dennis Canon is the canon that's used by the National Church to maintain property. Just see when it goes back to 1979, when the Dennis Canon came into being, and that has been the benchmark for the Church to retain properties, rightly or wrongly, and they are pretty near successful throughout the country, except in the Diocese of Virginia, where many of the parishes came into existence before the absolute, before the formation of the church, of the Episcopal Church, when it broke from the Church of England. So that's about the only case. The rest are losing. There's no question about that. My question is this: why or who was responsible for dropping the fourth moratoria from the Dar es Salaam communique? Why was that out? If it was there, we would not be having this discussion. How come it got dropped, and who dropped it?
Well, the council decided not to include it. It was put to the council.
What council are you talking about?
This council, the meeting of the Anglican Consultative Council this morning, debated that very issue about whether to include reference to that moratorium or not. And the decision of the council was not to include it. Now, various people voted for various reasons, I guess, but expressed in the debate was the notion that that was a call which arose from a meeting of the primates and not from the Windsor report itself. And it was felt that it was best to stick with the moratoria raised in the Windsor report itself, if I remember what was said correctly in the meeting.
Gregory, you want to...
I think Philip has said the main things. In the Dar es Salaam communique, there was a definite sense that the primates wanted to articulate what they saw as some of the problems that would need to be resolved and indicate some way in which they could be resolved. I don't think in Dar es Salaam they talked about the request to end litigation in terms of a formal fourth moratorium. It is true to say that the Windsor Continuation Group did use that language and wanted to see the cessation of litigation as a very serious commitment that needed to be explored. And I think we'd want to echo that in the terms that Archbishop Philip has already echoed it, in that we'd like to see an end to battles through the courts. What we can't do at this distance is adjudicate on the rights and wrongs of what's going on. Colin referred to the complexity of the situation. I mean, the truth is that each state in the United States has its own property law. So you're not dealing with one body of law, you're dealing with 50 bodies of law. And so there's a very, very complex pattern. And I think it would also be true to say that the issues between any bishop and congregation are often very different as well. So there's not a sort of blanket formula that can be rolled out.
Tess, you said. Now that the recommendations of the Windsor Continuation Group have been affirmed, what's next? What expectations, if any, does the Council have for the member provinces of the community?
Well, the council resolved to ask the Archbishop and the Standing Committee and the Secretary General to follow them through, and there'll be an implementation track for each of them, I guess. So it depends which recommendations you're talking about. The council, this council meeting, has spent considerable time already on the listening process and has charted a course forward with the listening process in a separate resolution. The moratoria are caught up in the resolution that was passed this morning. It depends which... the Archbishop has reported on the developments with the pastoral visitors, which he hopes will be fleshed out into the pastoral forum. The other main part... Well, the IASCUFO has been asked to take up the roles and responsibilities of the instruments and how they relate to one another. A review of the effectiveness of the ACC will be caught up in that process. The covenant, well, we wait to see what happens with the covenant this afternoon. And the mediated conversations, urgently required, again, have been reaffirmed here. So, and the Archbishop himself has a key role in that with the pastoral visitors. So they're the main areas. I think it's a matter of the Standing Committee with the Secretary-General and the Archbishop seeing where things are at the end of this council meeting and then working with the various bodies to take forward the various recommendations. And I don't think we have any more detail about how it will unfold than that at this stage. Do you want to add to that, Gregory?
No, I think you got it right.
Mary Frances?
Mary Frances Schonberg, Episcopal News Service. I'd like to go back to property one more time. Alienation of property is a very legal term. I guess I'd wonder if either of you would like to comment on if Anglicanism has this sense of place, the sense of local place. In a lot of the instances in the Episcopal Church, what's happened is that those people who want to stay in the Episcopal Church have been prevented from worshiping in their own churches. And it's the people who want to leave the Episcopal Church who are physically retaining the property. Do you see any way to break that impasse? I mean, that's not about courts. That's about where do I go on Sunday morning?
And I think that's part of the great sadness. You know, these divisions do not run between one diocese and another. They don't run between one parish and another. These lines of deep hurt run right down through the middle of congregations. And the only way through all that really is for generous accommodation by groups of people for each other out of Christian charity and concern for one another. Those kinds of solutions will only emerge from compassionate understanding flowing from face-to-face conversations, I think. And I think that kind of approach is reflected in the resolutions that have been made in the council. So where congregations and dioceses are unable to move in that direction on their own, I think the rest of the communion has expressed a desire to assist and facilitate and support the emergence of those things. So that shouldn't be understood as some kind of new centralised authority imposing itself, but brothers and sisters in Christ feeling the hurt, expressing concern and wanting to contribute where they can. So hopefully some ways will open up where we're able to do that a bit more.
Chris, back to you.
Yes, I mean, that's a helpful expression of the communion assisting. I mean, how could the communion have assisted in the cases of the properties in Virginia where the recent retired Bishop Peter Lee had recent accommodation with the 11 churches and was prevented from taking that forward by the central TEC hierarchy?
I'm not familiar enough with the situation, Chris, to be able to comment, I'm sorry.
I'm not asking you to comment, I'm asking you to say how would the, in that situation, which is a fact,
Yes.
How would the communion, in a sense, have, you said, yes, come in and support where it's got to that level, yes, of alienation, I suppose? How would the communion assist there, where the diocese and the churches had come to an accommodation, it was all agreed, etc., and then at a different level it was squashed?
Yes, well, as I say, I won't comment on that particular situation, but in general terms, I think we've had several goes in various ways at the communion level to try to ensure or to try to bring about the situation where a fair and just approach is taken, where people on all sides of these debates are listened to and heard, and a way forward is tried to be found. Now, unfortunately, some of those initiatives have not produced fruit. The panel of reference was a legitimate attempt to try to do that. The pastoral council and the other proposals made in the Dar es Salaam communique from the primates meeting were another attempt to do that. And it was very interesting in my reflection group this week, my discernment group, the point was made that the proposal that the primates made in Dar es Salaam was not at all the proposal that the Executive Council of the Episcopal Church heard. What they said no to was not the proposal that several primates thought they were making. And the fall, why it fell down, we think, was that that Tech responded to a piece of paper. Whereas if the primates had sent some people to speak with leaders in the Episcopal Church, there might have been a greater degree of understanding and perhaps a greater prospect that some of the pastoral initiatives would be better understood and implemented. And that was another lesson to us about the urgent need for face-to-face communication, for us to sit down and talk and work these things through rather than communicate via the internet or with pieces of paper. So all I can say, Chris, is that where there is a sense of people feeling unjustly dealt with and not heard, to try to call in someone who can facilitate deeper listening is probably a good step to take. And the communion stands ready, has said several times it stands ready to try and assist in that way.
So as Andrew Carey said today, I'm going to pick up the phone.
Yeah, well, the phone is probably one step better than paper and internet, but face-to-face meetings matter. I mean, I think the experience of the standing committee going to meet with the House of Bishops in the United States was a very significant thing. It was certainly significant for me being part of it. But a number of the American bishops said to us, "We're really glad you came. Your presence has actually enabled us to interact with each other in a different way." Now, that was just an example, I think, and I think there are lessons there for us. We shouldn't perhaps wait so long before we get deeper human engagement. And sometimes that's assisted internally within a province by having some partners from elsewhere being party to the conversations.
The Archbishop of Kent was given the authority 2 years ago at Dar es Salaam, a pastoral forum, to do something. Nothing has really happened, and now it's being revived again to do something. Why was there such silence for 2 years and nothing was really done in offering these pastoral forums and ways to move forward? We never saw anything, unless I missed it, that really came out of that. And now he's, I understand, reviving it again.
I think I'd want to draw a very clear distinction between the pastoral council idea of Dar es Salaam and the pastoral forum idea, which is currently being talked about. The pastoral council idea at Dar es Salaam was the idea that perhaps you could create a body that could act in looking after some of the disaffected congregations and dioceses and provide a sort of stakeholder body in which both TEC and the wider communion would have a stake in looking after those bodies. The reason the Archbishop didn't proceed with it was because when the House of Bishops at TEC declared their adamant opposition to it, the Archbishop came to the conclusion that it wouldn't work, that it wasn't sustainable as an initiative. Now, people might want to take that up with him to argue it through, but it was his judgment at that time. The pastoral forum idea, which is currently under discussion, is not an attempt to create a quasi-jurisdictional body. It's not an attempt to create an overarching authority to whom anyone would be responsible. It's rather an attempt to do the face-to-face, the picking up the telephone, the talking to people to hear what their needs are, style of initiative. In other words, I think the Pastoral Forum is very much along the lines of subclause E of this morning's resolution, trying to provide ways in which urgent conversations can be held, can be facilitated, can be brokered.
Thank you.